Aquaman.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
That's me. I'm here. Hi, Paul. What's happening?
Hi, Brian. Not much. It's just been a busy time of the year.
It is.
Some people say it's the most wonderful time of the year.
It is the most wonderful time of the year.
Some people say there's way too many people and they need to get out of my way. But I'm not saying I'm one of those people.
Cold outside.
We're not supposed to talk about that anymore. That song.
Well, that song was always creepy.
It actually has been creepy for a long time.
Right. And, you know, it's like Dean Martin. Okay, Dean Martin, my favorite. Maybe, you know, he's right up there in the pantheon. He's up there with, like, Tom Waits and Merle Haggard and Sun Ra in terms of my pantheon of wow. of favorite musicians. But his version in particular, you know, it's even if lyrically it wasn't creepy, his delivery is pretty damn creepy.
Yeah. I have yet to hear a version of that song that isn't creepy. When it gets
baby
to the
old outside, you know, like panting, and you're like, dude, don't be this.
Yeah, when it gets to the how can you do this to me, I'm like, really, guy? Just chill out a little bit. Let the poor girl go.
Apparently,
home.
We're overly sensitive on the matter, so, you know.
Yes.
We hate fun.
I'm a snowflake, blob.
We are snowflakes because it's cold outside.
And while we're at it, those reindeer are assholes.
Again. You know, it's not a news flash. They were always kind of assholes to, you know.
The poor old Rudolph.
Santa's kind of a dick.
Well, no, isn't Santa, you know, Santa turns it all around and then suddenly all the reindeer are hypocrites.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen.
That's our important 2 cents on the matter.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, this is what we do when we can't think of a topic to start with.
Yeah, it's a, boy howdy, it's a, it is a down period on comic book news.
Well, I mean, there have been trailers released recently for Captain Marvel and Avengers Endgame now has a title.
How exciting.
It actually is exciting. I think I'm really excited for Endgame. It looks awesome.
And for anybody who has followed our podcast and heard our Infinity Gauntlet podcast already kind of knows what's going to go down.
It's exciting. You're not as excited as for the MCU as I am. But
no, it's but fine. It's
I'm
fine.
All
very
in.
Entertaining films.
They are incredibly entertaining, and I'm eagerly anticipating. You know, it's something, it's kind of sounds stupid. I shouldn't even say this, but I get these really weird notions like, what if I die and I don't get to see the movie? these thoughts pass through my mind. I hope I can stay alive till April.
It's what every Game of Thrones reader has been going through for the past 20 years.
Yeah. Oh, man. And also the Flash, the Arrowverse, Flaroverse.
What do you call it? Flaroverse?
I didn't make that up. People call it
that's
the Flash.
Thing.
Yeah, the Flash Arrowverse, so Flaroverse. It's true.
I've heard Arrowverse, although, you know, one would, you know, I think the Flash is probably the prime show anymore.
Exactly. So no, that is a thing. People call it the Flaroverse. Yeah, the Elseworlds crossover is coming up. As we record this, it's actually tonight, I believe.
We're a couple hours away, I believe.
Woohoo.
Yeah. Although it kind of threw me off because, you know, they're starting with The Flash. So, you know, I'm like, it's Sunday night. I'm expecting, you know, Supergirl. Yeah, they're changing the schedule all around.
Well, it's an Elseworlds situation.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's, okay.
Yeah. On Earth,
this is 50. An alternative.
Flash
you know.
Is always on Sunday. But anyway, you know, I'm sure you saw the teaser at the end of all the episodes,
right? With all the dead people.
Yeah.
The little Easter eggs as to who each dead person is.
Yeah, I think there was a costume of was a Green Arrow from Smallville.
Yeah.
Which you know, hey, Smallville's in canon now. Woohoo!
Well, why not?
Sure, why not? I think it's great. I think you know. John Wesley Shipp in his old Flash outfit looks great still. I think I've mentioned this before.
And he looks just like Barry Allen's dad for some reason.
It does look like Barry Allen's dad.
Wait.
I think I've mentioned this before. The early 90s Flash series with John Wesley Shipp was quite good and underrated.
I did not watch it.
I bought it on DVD. You know, it was one of those things where you walk in and the complete series for $10. I'm like, sure, why not? And it's actually quite good. Great cameo with Mark Hamill as the Trickster. Hmm. Quite good.
Mark Hamill is the Trickster in...
Yes, he reprised his role.
Now this is what happens when you don't know your history.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I'm thinking, well, isn't that neat? It's Mark Hamill. And with no idea that we were reprising a role or reprising a role, whichever what you prefer.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Yeah. Yep. Tomato, tomato, and potato, potato. And besides, and if you actually say potato, you're a silly person. No one says potato.
Except for half of our readers half of our listeners who we've now alienated. due to the great potato potato debate of 2018.
Yes, we're going to be hit on Twitter. Potato haters.
Oh, those are those guys. I can't believe it.
Well, one last thing on the Elseworlds thing. Batwoman looks great. She looks awesome.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see that.
You know, I like the actress. What's her name? She's in Orange is the
New. Ruby Rose.
Yeah, Ruby Rose, yeah.
Yeah, she looks great. Superman guy, well, I can't remember what the actor's name is. Looks awesome in his black suit. No mullet, but not that one.
Brandon Routh.
No, not that one. Although he does look good in his Atom suit. Can we just say Legends of Tomorrow is killing it this year?
Oh, it's so good.
Oh my God, it's so great.
I've been singing I think I've sung the praises of that show on this very podcast.
As have I. Yes.
Yes.
It's nuts. In the very first episode this year, they talk about how people in the Time Bureau, like, we have a small following. Yeah, you know, we get good ratings from them. Like, oh, way to get meta, guys.
It's the best show in, like, we'll call it the Arrowverse. Although Black Lightning has some great blaxploitation elements to it, which are pretty fun. But
I'm behind on that one. I haven't caught up. But yes, Legends of Tomorrow, just great. And the addition of Constantine, just wonderful. Or Constantine, potato, potato.
You could call him John, or you could call him John.
Or John, with an apostrophe.
John Johns. When I was a kid growing up, I thought it was John Johns. The Martian Manhunter. I was like, John Johns. I don't know. You know, you told me to spell things out like they look.
Absolutely.
But, you know, so I thought that was a very unique way of looking at things.
One of my favorite Greek plays is Antigone.
Which means they stayed?
That's right. No, it's like my uncle stayed, my Antigone.
I'm so glad there's nothing for us to talk about this time around.
No. Oh, so listeners, if you're still here, thanks. We'll be talking about the main subject in just a moment. In fact, should we just take a break and get to it?
We should take a break and get to it.
Okay, let's take a break and get to it. Back in a few minutes I probably should tell everyone what we're reading today.
What are we reading today, Paul?
It's Aquaman, Death of a Prince. The 1974 Dark Tale.
That would have been really useful to know before we started this.
I know.
Okay.
Let's revamp and be back in a few minutes.
Aquaman and Firestorm. Stand for truth and justice
in sea, on land,
in air. Aquaman and Firestorm, they make a super pair.
The Fire and Water Podcast, celebrating Aquaman, King of the Seven Seas, and Firestorm, the Nuclear Man.
Available at Fire and Water Podcast, Aquaman Shrine, Firestorm Fan, and on iTunes and Stitcher.
I'm one of your hosts, the Irredeemable Shag, here to talk about Firestorm. Along with me is my co-host, Rob Kelly, here to talk about some guy that talks to fish.
Really? You're going to pull this crap during the promo? It's bad enough I have to put up with your shenanigans every...
We are back.
Are we?
Are we? We are back.
Okay. All right. I'll do my synopsis now.
Okay.
Aquaman was created in 1941, and for the majority of his early run, his stories tended to be on the lighter side. Sometimes silly, sometimes downright goofy. In other words, ironically, Aquaman wasn't that deep. Well, that was a good one. But in the 1970s, an attempt was made to make the character more mature and to deal with more adult themes. He became King of Atlantis and had to deal with politics and near-constant challenges to his rule. He got married, had a child, and so had to deal with the pressures of being a family man. He also semi-adopted a teenager, and so became a mentor and teacher. All this while still dealing with being a superhero and part of the Justice League. In Death of a Prince, all these more mature themes culminate. Aquaman finds his kingship at its lowest ebb, and his subjects in Atlantis none too happy with his rule. Add to that the relentless attacks and dubious plots from the likes of Black Manta, Ocean Master, and the Fisherman?
Ooh.
Now we find Arthur Curry at his wit's end. And when a diabolical plot is uncovered from a villain whose motives are, let's say, fishy, Aquaman must make decisions that pit friend against friend, husband against wife, and lead ultimately to, as the title suggests, the death of his child. Death of a Prince is simultaneously lighthearted and dark. It attempts to deal with themes of loyalty and betrayal, duty and responsibility, and grief in the aftermath of tragedy, albeit in a very 70s kind of way. Written by several authors, including David Michelinie, Jerry Conway, Stephen Skeets, and Paul Levitz, and with art by the likes of Jim Aparo and Mike Grell. Death of a Prince is classic Silver Age comic book experimentation. Perhaps not everything that was attempted here works, but there's no doubt that it changed the legacy of Aquaman as a character. Ryan, what did you think of Death of a Prince?
Well, I certainly think you nailed, in your intro, some of the aspects. It's still very silly in some ways, where the negative reputation came into play. But at the same time, I think what impressed me the most was through a variety of writers. This was a long read. This was like 330 some pages long. I don't remember the individual issues, but this was over a year's worth of comics, right?
Easily. There was 34 comics, but a lot of them were the shorter, you know, only half
right.
comic.
Right. Like, because it was Adventure Comics and it shared, you know, page space with, like Martian Manhunter, I think was in there. And there was the Creeper had like some, and Superboy and all of that stuff.
Exactly.
But I think what most impressed me, and there were very good aspects of the story. I don't mean to, when I say it's silly, it's comics. Of course, there's things that are silly. But I think what impressed me is that this carried a theme throughout 2 to 3 years worth of comics, maybe even longer, 300 and some pages of actual text. And at least, I counted like 5 different writers at least throughout it. But it carried this sort of long-term theme through it all. Because you saw hints way back in like the first couple issues that this collection takes up of Arthur Curry, Aquaman, losing control of his kingdom. And that is carried through, not in every issue, but is carried through consistently throughout this entire run. And that to me is pretty impressive, particularly for a 70s comic.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, it has been done by a single writer. Who's on a right. very, very long run or, you know, done a comic book for a very long time, but have so many different writers keeping it together. That is unusual and impressive.
And it's hard for me to know, like, how much editorial directive was involved. It's Aquaman. I don't see them approaching this as, you know, this isn't the Avengers or Justice League or Batman. So
yeah, that I don't know, but it did hold together really well, you know, for a 70s Silver Age comic.
Right.
You know, and you have to keep that in mind that in our last episode, we talked about how in the 1970s, we're trying to be more relevant and socially conscious and political, etc. But it was a very strange way of doing it.
Right.
You know, they were trying new things and they were trying to become more aware, more woke, if you want to say that. But it didn't always come across in the best way. And that's what's happening here. You can see a lot of people trying new ideas and trying out, really experimenting with what they want to do. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. But they do keep a nice through line. You know, a lot of the writers are playing off each other. So it's impressive and weird at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, and even with the art, the difference in art sometimes is a little jarring occasionally, particularly how Arthur Curry is represented a lot. Yeah. But Mira kind of looks the same from issue to issue, I think, you know, but that's, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And to the socially conscious thing, it's, I think they really tried to, you definitely see like environmental concerns coming into play, which makes perfect sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, you see that in the Submariner, the Namor stuff with Marvel as well, where that is often addressed.
Yeah, absolutely. They also try to get into, and this is probably the most awkward couple of issues, is when Black Manta is revealed as being black. And I could see where they were going, where the writers were going with that, but it plays off very awkward.
Yeah, it doesn't play well to modern sensibilities. That's
no,
for sure.
No. And again, I'm always torn between reading it in its time, but then you have to also read it like, how does it hold up over 30, 40 years? So you gotta see it in a multitude of ways.
Well, it's always tricky because you have the Batman, the Detective Comics. I think there was this big collection that was supposed to come out from DC, a collection of like Detective Comics before Batman. And it got scotched just recently. I think DC got cold feet because representation of Asians, the Yellow Menace, the Yellow Peril.
Yeah.
And some rather egregious there. And, you know, one of the arguments was, should it be released anyway with disclaimers, you know, we don't want to bury history and such, but so yeah, you get that with Aquaman too. It's you read some of this stuff, some of it is cringe inducing,
but you need to see that because it's a very, I've said this a bunch of times, this period, this late 60s early 70s is very transitional between right. 1950s awfulness and some more socially conscious things that are going to happen in the 80s and 90s. But this is, you know, and I find it hard to fault someone for not being perfect. You know, I like to praise someone for their intentions, and they were trying, they had good intention.
Right.
So do you want to get into some of the, you know, some of the details?
Sure. Yeah. Let's do that.
Well, I mean, this is we're not going to go issue by issue, obviously, because it's too long of a run. But there are certain things I just wanted to pick out. First of all, and this is might seem obvious, isn't hard water just ice? what I mean by that is Mira's power is to create hard water. It's like that's ice.
Well, there's numerous. Well, first of all, that leads into, and it must be noted, one of the best lines ever in the history of comics is. Involves ice and it's in this series and it's in keeping with what you were talking about when he was battling Mirror Master and he shoots some kind of ice thing or something like that. Mirror Master shouts, do you know where I'm going with this?
I do.
Mirror Master shouts out the line, "Eat cold ice, fish man." and besides the hilarity of, you know, shouting out something into fish man, is there warm ice?
There is warm ice. That's cold water.
Yeah.
And there's really warm ice, which is steam.
Yes.
Yes.
So I'm glad we were able to work that in because you should read and the whole, all of these issues, there's so many puns. I can see why you picked this. Cause there's a lot of water puns. And
there is a lot of water puns. There's another aspect of this that I found really funny is they were trying so hard to make Aquaman into Batman.
Cause right.
He had an aqua cave and he had every, you know, basically Aqualad is Robin.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny how Batman seems to be working, so let's just turn everybody into Batman.
Well, and because he's got some crime solving stuff that Aquaman does at various
points
too, and they even bring Batman in for an issue because that's what you do. Batman was Wolverine before Wolverine was Wolverine, and before Wolverine was Deadpool, before Deadpool was Harley Quinn. But, sales are flagging. Let's bring in Batman.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you got your heavy hitters. You need to do a crossover every now and again. Keep the kids interested.
Right.
But you know, about the Aqua Cave, there's one issue where it shows a cutout, and I you know, of all the different floors and what's inside.
Right. Yeah.
I love that. Yes. I love those. You know, you also always do that with the Batcave, and the Fantastic Four used to do it with the Baxter Building all the time.
And the League of the Justice League.
Yep, I actually really enjoy that sort of thing. I'm trying to keep it light here in the beginning, because once we get to the death of an infant, it's gonna bring the proceedings down a bit.
I can't fathom how that would happen.
Another issue I want to bring up is the fact that Arthur Curry is a terrible, terrible father. He's just not very good at watching his kid.
Mira isn't particularly great either.
No, here.
I mean, you know, it's, well, I mean, when you have a giant squid named Topo who's your best friend.
Yeah, let's leave the baby. Let's leave the baby with a giant squid, because, you know, why not? Octopus.
It's, octopus, yeah. Yes, we know there's a difference between a squid and an octopus.
Yes.
And how terrible a father are you that you can't even name your own kid, so you just call it Aqua Baby?
I know. Doesn't it seem like, because eventually he's called Arthur Curry Jr.
Right.
But that just seems almost like an afterthought.
I think it was. And I think as we get to the, you know, the darker aspect of it, I think someone realized, you know, the kid should probably have a name, because, you know, death of Aqua Baby just doesn't really grab the heartstrings.
No, it doesn't. And that was it should have been Aqua Toddler, because he's much bigger than a baby.
Right. But, you know, it's, you already have someone who, seriously, going by the name of Aqua Lad, which is bad enough.
Let's start first. What to get back to what you were saying, how there's a through line through all these stories. The fact that there's, you know, the main antagonists are Black Manta, of course. He keeps showing up. Ocean Master and the Fisherman. Is the Fisherman related to Mushmouth?
I don't know. The Fisherman has to be like one of the worst villains ever.
Oh my God. He's got, I don't know what's on his head.
It's Mushmouth. I don't know if it's a jellyfish, or it's just some kind of like sea critter plopped on top of his head.
Yeah, he's got...
With eyes.
Yeah, he's got big old wader boots on with multicolored lures on his belt. Yeah. And he carries...
And a rod and reel.
And a rod That's and reel. Weapon.
That's his weapon.
God.
And the fact that they kept using him...
I know.
...over and over again, like different writers. I was like, if I was the writer on that, I was like, and someone told me, okay, you get to write Aquaman, but you have to work in Fisherman in X amount of... comics, I'd be like, I think I'll wait for the next next available assignment.
Exactly. At least Black Manta has a very cool iconic look to him. But
yeah, Black Manta's kind of cool. There are sometimes I'm rooting for Black Manta, you know, it's like
but
Fisherman.
Yeah. But all these villains, they all see the, you know, that's another through line that they all have. They're all working for someone else.
Right.
Who turns out to be someone who's plotting internally to get him, Aquaman, removed from the throne of Atlantis, which is an interesting reveal right there, that he's a hybrid shark man.
Like Tiger Shark. It's a tiger mutated shark. Tiger Shark who was like one of Green Lantern's enemies at some point.
I know.
I'm trying to figure out how, like, I haven't read the Green Lantern issues that featured, you know, mutated Tiger Shark man or whatever his name is.
Mutated Tiger Shark Man, I think, is fine.
It works. Hey, we have Fisherman and Aqua Baby.
Yeah, that I found very disjointed, because I kind of, you know, the big reveal. I'm a Green Lantern villain. Oh, I've not read those issues. I don't know who you are.
And ultimately a rather very silly villain as well.
But it's, I thought it was very interesting that all that was tied in. So it finds out, you know, Black Manta isn't just attacking Atlantis because he's a glutton for punishment. He's actually working for someone, working towards a goal that actually succeeds, sort of.
Yes, sort of. I mean, it's obviously, as we've referenced, Aquaman loses his kingship. He got voted out. So apparently in Atlantis, you can vote for your king.
Apparently we can do that here, too.
But yeah. It's through a series of mishaps and misadventures due to the work of Black Manta, Ocean Master,
The Fisherman,
or The Fisherman, something Quaker. I forget what that one was.
Yeah, he's got some interesting villains, let's just say. And Aquaman, boy, he loves his flying fish and whales. Whales are just, you know, that's his backup plan at all
right.
times.
Right. He uses the same, you know, you'd think in an ocean full of marine life,
yeah,
he could switch it up a little bit, but.
Oh, that's something. There's one issue where he's calling all his sea creatures, and eventually he calls down, he telepathically calls down some eagles.
Oh, right, because they're sea eagles.
Exactly. The editor had to inject, these are sea eagles, that's why he can call them. The artist totally did not make a mistake in any way, shape, or form.
No.
They're sea eagles.
Well, then, you know, I got to give him credit for that one. It really doesn't matter if it makes sense.
I would have preferred they were like, it's just off the Seattle coast. These are actually Seahawks. Oh. You know, it sounds like I'm making fun of these issues, and I am. But I actually had a lot of fun reading this.
Right, and yeah. Some of that is that is part of the fun of these comics and this comic. I mean, it's a theme that we return to quite a bit, and we'll probably continue returning to quite a bit. Is that, of course, some of this makes no sense. It's ridiculous, but that's why we like it. And because only in this medium can you do some of the things that Aquaman is doing. They could not. We haven't seen the film yet. It's not out yet, but. You know, there's no way they can recreate in the film some of the silliness of the comics.
It seems as if they are, though. Not to digress just a little bit, what I've seen of the movie. Now the movie has not come out yet, so we haven't seen the movie. But the endless trailers that they've put out, it seems as if they're trying to get into more of the silly stuff. You know, to make Aquaman not a joke, but funnier.
Right.
Which is good. I think that should be embraced. It looks like the Shazam movie is embracing the silliness of Shazam, and I hope Aquaman embraces the inherent goofiness of Aquaman.
Right. Because a lot of Aquaman's action scenes are him sending telepathic messages. And so, you know, you have him like kind of squinting, and you have the telepathic lines coming out from his head, and it looks like he's, you know, a little backed up. Like, and this is an action sequence. This is Aquaman in action, sending telepathic waves.
Aqua pooping. But it is true. There's lots of swimming around each other. It depending on the artist. I mean, I think Mike Grell's work is actually quite impressive. But sometimes Aquaman's art, it just looks like he's not doing anything.
Right. And here's, so also in keeping with the swimming around thing, and again, we'll hit the themes here in a minute, but I'm not super well versed in my science. I know science a little bit, you know, and as many of us do. And so maybe you have a better take on this. So I found myself often getting confused. Are they in water or are they not in water? Which part is water? Who's breathing underwater? Who's not breathing underwater? Shouldn't some people not be breathing because this is supposed to be in water?
Well, I think it's underwater, but then they're also in the dome.
Right.
Which I don't think is underwater.
And the super sequat, secret super sequat.
Super sequat. That's another one of his villains, super sequat.
in his super secret aqua headquarters, you know, is that underwater? I mean, the headquarters are underwater, but inside, because it looks like it's open.
Yes, and they're all walking around on the ground instead of swimming.
Yes.
I would say it's very inconsistent. This doesn't have anything to do really with science. It has to do with an inconsistent portrayal. And like the farming, there's kelp farmers.
Right.
Because I guess kelp is the major product in Atlantis.
But they're supposed to, right, because they're not able to breathe underwater, right? But it sure looks like they're underwater.
Well, they are able to breathe underwater because they have that Serum X.
Okay.
Locked away in a vault, remember?
Oh, the Serum X, yeah.
So there's something that... And again, this is kind of weird because I do not have, I'm not well versed in Aquaman lore, Aqua lore. I only have very limited knowledge of the history of Aquaman. So my understanding is that the Atlanteans are surface dwellers that use this Serum X to breathe underwater. But then Aquaman naturally can breathe underwater because he's very proud of the fact that he can go on land.
Right. But only for 1 hour.
Which is weird.
Yeah, but this is not unique to Aquaman either. It's like all of these people who have like powers that only last for a certain, like 1 hour. Yeah, I was like, That doesn't seem, I feel like in nature, the amount of time you would be out of water would be more random than 60
minutes. Well, he's totally okay if he could just like spritz himself with a bottle of water. Well, it's right. True. You know, some of the sprinklers go off and he's totally fine. He just needs, you know, he just needs a little spray bottle. Give himself a sprinkle every now and again. How does that work when he's with the Justice League? Does he have a bathtub that he just runs off and jumps into every now and again?
Maybe so. Well, you know, Batman probably, you know, Batman has everything else in his utility belt. He probably has a spray bottle. He has the aqua bottle that, you know, he just pulls out, like, you know, gives like you said, gives Aquaman a nice spritz and then back in the utility belt and they're good to go. They don't always represent that in the comics because that's a panel that you don't need to show.
Yeah, you know, a little aqua spritz every now and again. I think it's great that we can just put the word aqua in front of everything.
It works, doesn't it?
All this frivolity aside. Let's get into, there are some really interesting and really, really well done attempts at, you know, a serious take, you know, some serious real world topics. I guess, first of all, Aquaman has no compunction about killing people, which I thought was really interesting in this. He doesn't actually kill anyone in these stories, but he talks about it a lot.
He's not a he's also kind of a different, and that's an idea that was explored in much greater detail later on, like Grant Morrison's run on Justice League and Peter David's run.
I was going to say in the 90s,
you know, where that sort of, where Aquaman, it was the attempt for them to turn Aquaman into less of a joke. And, you know, then he became sort of the brute force of, you know, the Justice League in particular. You know, he was the, you know, the bearded, one-armed, you know, madman almost.
That's actually a direct offshoot of this story.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, you know, because of the death of Aqualad, or not Aqualad, Aquababy, he loses everything and becomes a more brooding, depressed
Batman-esque.
Long before the 90s.
He was
a grim, dark character.
Yes.
Well, as far as that could go.
It is interesting how they build that into him, because there's always a little bit of seriousness to him. But once Aquababy dies, it's, you know, he goes out seeking revenge, and he's going to kill a mother trucker.
Well, first of all, yeah, so that's another very mature theme, is first of all, they do kill the baby, which I really thought, I hadn't read this arc before I recommended this. I had read bits and pieces of it, but I hadn't read the entire thing.
Okay.
So this is new to both of us. So I honestly thought once Aquababy died, they would go off and they would somehow resurrect him through magic. Oh, ancient Atlantean magic. They would resurrect him and all would be status quo. That did not happen. And I was shocked.
They even instilled like a false hope.
Right. Because Mira goes on her little side quest to her own dimension, which I did not know Mira was from a different dimension. A Mira universe,
I you could say. To be honest, I do not know if in currently she's, if they've retconned that or not, but yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I honestly thought, you know, of course they're going to bring the baby back. Goodness gracious. That's a ballsy move for 1974.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's certain rules. You don't kill children and you don't kill pets.
Right. They did.
Yeah, and both.
Yeah.
Aquaman sends a lot of fish to their death.
He really does.
And I don't even mean that as a joke. It's sort of like, damn, you know, it's kind of heartless, but, you know, for someone who's supposed to be a friend to the sea, you know, life. But yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, you know, he uses them and then he, I assume, has dinner. Cause he's seen eating fish, so that seems a little odd.
Well, if you can't eat your friends, who can you eat? Yeah, I mean, it is, and even the way that Aquababy dies, he drowns.
Well, he suffocates.
Or suffocates, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's horrible.
And then, and also the situation that he's in, where he has to fight Aqualad in order to save Aquababy, which sounds silly to say out loud, but he really goes full force and tries to kill Aqualad in order to save his baby.
You know, and Aqualad gets all
huffy about it.
Emo about the matter.
Yeah.
Which I get. If someone was trying, you know, if you and I were like, you know, battling for the you know, soul or life of you know, one of our loved ones, you know, I mean, certainly I'm quite fond of you, Paul, but you know, it's
Yeah, well, so if it came down to you or my daughter, you know, sorry, buddy.
You kill me. But at the same time, I think, you know, I'd like to believe that once it was all over and we both survived and, you know, what have you, I'd like to be like, well, that really kind of sucked that Paul was trying to kill me.
Yeah,
but
well, no, I wouldn't enjoy it.
It was me or his daughter or his kid. You know, I think I would try to be a little less huffy about the matter.
Well, he does. He kind of goes off on his own side quest. I don't know, finds his revolutionary parents and then realizes that Aquaman's cooler than his real dad. I didn't really.
Well, his dad was a despot, right? So like we find out Aqualad's dad was a despot. And that was pretty dark too, really. When you like look at Aqualad's origin, when he finds his, you know, true family and, you know, that was kind of messed up as well.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, kudos to the writers and the creative teams here, because they were really trying to do something very different, especially for the time. Right. Now this sort of storyline, like I said, late 80s, 90s, you know, par for the course, but this is way, way ahead of the curve for darker material. And kind of like what I said in my synopsis, I don't think everything works. Like, after Aquababy dies, Aquaman goes off and tries to avenge his death, but he just takes off. Mira's distraught.
Hasn't even been informed yet, right? She doesn't even know that.
Exactly.
Wait, to be honest, I'm not even sure. Well, I think there's a scene where they're like telling someone to take the baby to Mira.
Right.
But as far as we know, it's, you know, how did the baby get to Mira? It's not important. All of this stuff happened off panel, of course,
yeah,
in the same way that Batman spritzes Aquaman.
Batman spritzes Aquaman. That's a movie waiting to happen, right?
That is. It may not be for all audiences. But, you know, he doesn't even bother to, like, inform his wife.
Yeah, well, that gets back to the Aquaman's a terrible father and a terrible husband. You know, and so that was really odd, because he basically takes off and has all these adventures. He's going off for vengeance, but several things happen along the way.
Yeah, and according to the comic, it's like
months.
I feel like, yeah, he's gone for months. And when you're reading, of course, the timeline, you're looking at it going, well, all of this stuff happened over a couple days. It's like, how has he been gone like a month? Because it's all sequential. You know, one thing immediately follows the next thing. Again, this is comics. I'm maybe nitpicking a tad more than I should be. But to assume that he's been gone for months, and it's like, really, he couldn't even telepathically, like, have one of his fish friends go and visit Mira and just let her know, hey, you know,
go
Aquaman,
and
here's a message from Aquaman, you know.
Go and console your grieving wife. I found it very hard to sympathize with Aquaman at that point. And when Mira blows up at him and tells him he's a terrible person, she's right. She's absolutely right.
And kind of always has been.
Yeah, I guess so. Even when he's silly, he's still sort of a dick.
Yeah, and he continues to be. I'm very curious to see what Kelly Sue DeConnick does with Aquaman, because she's taking over Aquaman, which I think is kind of exciting.
I think that'll be great. I think the current run of Aquaman has had some highlights, but basically, I mean, like I said before, I haven't read a lot of Aquaman over the years, but it seems like every run of Aquaman I read, he's losing his kingdom somehow.
Yes.
You know, it happens in Peter David's run. It happens in Jeff Johns' run. It happens in the current run.
I think it has to do with, it has to do with Atlantis and rulers of Atlantis in both Marvel and DC have a tendency not to keep control of their kingships.
Yeah. Or Atlanteans are just fickle.
Well, you know, maybe they just find leaders to be fishy.
Yeah. They have a different scale to rate them on.
Well, each ruler has a different purpose. I fumbled that one.
This is giving me a headache. No, anyway, they just want to make Atlantis great again.
Yeah.
But yes, so this does take a very dark turn. It's sort of...
I feel like but it's consistent with the buildup. To kind of wrap back around to what we first started talking about, to what you had alluded to, it's consistent and they have... They did a good job of showing the darkness coming amidst all the silliness and the idiot fisherman character and all of that stuff.
Right. It wasn't just like all of a sudden the baby was killed. This led up over months and story after story after story. And
because we had Aquababy was kidnapped. Well, they thought it was kidnapped. at some point, but it was just Topo taking it on a, you know, jaunt around the ocean.
It was a topographical jaunt.
You have to leave that in.
I might not. Yeah, I mean, so, and it is interesting to watch Aquaman's, I was going to say descent. That was not meant to be a pun. But he gets more and more frantic as these stories go along, because he's constantly being attacked by these various level of supervillains, and he's losing control at home, and you know, and that's a it's really well done. So it's not just suddenly a tragedy happens; you see it coming.
So and overall, I mean, I think it's a well done comic. It is of its time, which we say a lot with some of these things, but it is. But I think the fact that it sets up the Aquaman that we think of now versus the, you know, the Super Friends Aquaman. You know, this is not the Super Friends Aquaman. This is the transition between the Super Friends Aquaman to the sort of darker Aquaman that we know now. And, right. You know, and I think that's why, like, this particular arc, we would consider seminal, even with the silliness, we would consider seminal because of how long this characterization has lasted.
Exactly. And it did kind of usher in a darker tone to DC Comics. It would be years before you had your Frank Millers and Watchmen kind of things, but it added more of a darker realism, if you want to say.
Yeah, because Green Arrow, you know, shortly after this or around in this time period, was starting to introduce some darker themes, which of course we covered a few podcasts ago, but that was 80s.
Yeah. 80s, well, even, you know.
But it's no coincidence that Mike Grell was involved in the Aquaman, right?
Exactly. No, but things were changing. Comics were evolving at this point. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, some of this was a reaction to Marvel.
Yes, for sure. But, you know, like we said before, comics were becoming socially active, or socially conscious, more political, regardless of what people say now. It was really getting topical. And, you know, like I said, didn't always work, but creators were trying new things.
And don't get us wrong. If you're looking for a ton of issues that just involve, you know, long fight scenes and
being hit in the face with flying fish.
Right. It's this comic provides plenty of that.
Yeah. There's actually one about flying fish. The editor had to put in, flying fish don't actually fly. They just sort of glide. It's like, okay, thanks. Someone's been watching some National Geographic.
It feels like the editor had to jump in several times.
But overall, I mean, I say this all the time, but I love 70s comics. I love the experimentation of it. I love the goofiness of it. There's a lot to like in these comics. And this comic tried something really different, and it had lasting consequences, which you don't normally see.
Yeah.
So do you think that's it?
I think that's it.
All right.
So
I would recommend this to anyone who hasn't read it. Go out, you know, if you're going to read an Aquaman comic, which not a lot of people do, might as well give this one a shot.
Maybe, you know, pace yourself, though. It's a lot of comic.
Yeah, it's a deep dive, you might say.
It is a deep dive.
But the story kind of bubbles to the surface as you go along.
And then things go swimmingly from there.
There you go. So that's it. So next time, typically we would have Brian recommend something, but next time on the podcast, we will be doing a holiday episode. Brian and I will both be picking our, maybe not favorite Christmas issues, but at least ones that we really enjoy. Details on that will be forthcoming.
Yes. And I believe next for the next podcast, along with some of our favorite Christmas comics, we will be presenting our best and worst stuff, I think.
Yes.
Our little year in review.
Yeah, we didn't get to do that last year, and I'm looking forward to doing that this year. All right, so that'll be next time on an all-new episode of the Collected Edition. Anything else, Brian?
I believe I have nothing else to add.
All right. Well, of course, always thank you for listening, and if you want to get in touch with us, please visit our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or hit us up on Twitter, Collected ED Pod, that's Collected Ed Pod, and, you know, tweet at us, man. Let us know what you're thinking, because we love to hear comments. And if you get to leave us a review on iTunes, that would be great too, preferably a good one. otherwise, again, thanks for listening, and Until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at collectededpod. That's collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Do I need to do that again?
Do it again.
Aquaman.